Welcome back to People and Possibilities, the TL Partners podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Sigema. In our last episode, I got time to chat with Naomi Davidson, executive partner here at TL Partners. And together we explored why AI is crucial for HR professionals today. This time, we'll take a look at some practical examples of how AI is already reshaping HR. Naomi's going to walk us through what's working and what isn't, and we'll discuss the role of AI in making HR more strategic and data-driven. For those of you who listened to our second episode, some of the ideas discussed here might be familiar. It will be more than worth your time to take a double click onto some of the implications. Whether you're already working with AI or just really curious about its potential, this episode is for you. The places in HR that still most require kind of meaning making, which I definitely put performance management in that sphere, tend to be the places where the rote application of Gen AI is seeing the least value. But I also have a hypothesis that part of the reason is that a lot of folks are not being as sophisticated as they could be with how they're applying Gen AI. So part of what you're seeing is that when problems are fairly simple, we're slapping Gen AI on and it works out pretty well. When problems are really complex, we still just slap Gen AI on. And then turns out that's not actually the right way to think through things. How does that align with or look different than what you're seeing in the world? What other additions or refinements would you make on that thinking in terms of what's going on there?
I absolutely agree with your observation that in many ways, that's a symptom of not knowing what Gen AI is good at. And this is one of the strategies that I think is really, really important in any organization, which is to build personal AI fluency. Because if you don't know what it's good at, you're good at using it. And you're also making your job as a CHRO that much more difficult because you have to have the answers to everything and seat to be sitting in, right? So I would say that the kinds of situations where you find, for example, you'll find that people start using AI to write their emails. In some cases, you know, more efficient summary of the email bomb that you get back to from being away on vacation, you actually can get to it faster and more easily. That's kind of a good use case. But then you get the bad use case of AI talking to AI. So you don't actually have people communicating. You have AI communicating with my email sender to your email sender, and the people who needed to know don't. Where it's useful and where it's not is really important. The best ways that I have come across that I think is a good way to start building that understanding is actually to use Gen AI on something that you're really, really good at. Partner with it to solve a communication that you actually feel you could do way better. See what it does well and see what it doesn't do well. And what you'll find is that as you build your sophistication for where it lacks, you'll become better at understanding how not to use it. The other thing about that, too, is it helps you stay at the forefront of what AI can do more effectively, right? Because if you keep testing it on things that you're really, really good at, you'll start having a sense of how it's advancing and where it's advancing.
I want to just really underscore the wisdom of what you've just said, because I actually think it's a pretty non-intuitive, and it's particularly true in HR, but everywhere. In general, we all hate the stuff that we're not that good at and want to get rid of it. And so when we think about Gen AI and like where we want to test it, our first instinct goes to like, what's the stuff I hate to do? And I actually remember talking to a startup founder who had this experience where it was like, I was using it to write all my legal documents and pull them through as I was putting through. And I was blown away. I don't need to pay for a lawyer. This is fantastic. This is amazing. He's a product marketer by training, now a PM, then CEO. But he then used it to build a product marketing plan. And he was like, this is absolute crap. And at first, he was just disappointed there. And then he said, well, what if somebody with legal expertise views the legal jargon that I've just thrown out there with about the same sophistication that I view or assumes the same quality? Oh, this is a problem. Just the importance of building your own intuition around what this is right on the stuff that you are good at is really, really critical. Because I think most of us start in the other direction and get a lot of false confidence about what Gen AI today can or cannot do.
So then you take it back to the performance management. So there's one case where I've heard people doing something that I am sure is in the negative impact zone, having Gen AI write my performance review for me. I hate to say it, a really bad idea. Why is that a bad idea? Because I, as a manager, should know and understand what performance feedback I need to give, right? And if I'm not spending the time or putting in the calories to think through that, what in the world is Gen AI going to know about the 6 months or the 3 months of work that we've done together? And so what it's going to tend to do is give me very generic sounding feedback that coming from a manager only shows I didn't care enough to think about this myself, which has a negative impact on the employee, right? How have I heard it being used in a way that I actually think would add value is I've taken the time to write my performance review. Mm-hmm. And now I use Gen AI to read through and see if there's opportunities to offer more specific examples, to look for bias in my language, maybe even look for bias in my evaluation of men versus women. I'm not going to be as good at seeing myself, but if I didn't take the time to really think through what I'm giving as feedback, people are going to know that, and that's going to have a negative impact. So I really do think it's about understanding what is AI good at, and it is not good at taking over my relationships with people. That is up to me, and what AI can do is help me articulate that in a way that is grammatically correct, perhaps even in a language that I'm not proficient in, helping me search for much more meaningful examples in his work. But so advancing the quality of my writing, yes. Doing my writing for me, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. You know, one thing that actually I know that my sister uses Gen AI for in writing performance reviews is her weekly one-on-ones. She does track with here's what we're working on, here's what's good, etc. And then works with Gen AI to figure out, okay, over a period of time, what were the trends based on mentions? But even there, the distinction that I thought was really interesting is she's looking for trends on mentions, but she doesn't then just delegate it to then say, well, what matters from all of this? What I have found to be true is Gen AI is really great at generating and at synthesizing data, but it still kind of requires you as the expert to make meaning. And that should actually be good news, in my opinion, because that means many of us still have a job. Because where that meaning comes from your expertise, it comes from your intuition, from all of the things that we've kind of invested a career in building. And yet I think there's a real temptation, particularly when you're in a role that you mentioned is so overloaded already. Everything that feels like one more thing is just really easy to shift and throw off.
Totally. So I was watching the team from OpenAI who built O1, how they're using O1 to get the jobs done. And I found it really interesting how one developer talked about how it's changing how he codes. And he said, when he writes code, he usually lets O1 model take the first pass. So he's spending less time coding. However, he is not offloading coding to O1. What he's doing more time spending his time and effort on is thinking about the criteria and the requirements of success for that piece of code, which I would argue is a more elevated mental process, right? What is success for this? What does it mean to do it well? What are the boundary conditions around it? And then he spends less time actually writing the code itself and paying attention to syntax and the other things. So when you're using, but obviously he's an expert developer. Yeah. So he's not simply taking the code off the shelf, I'm sure, and just, you know, using it blindly and assuming that it's all correct and 100%. But it does shift your gears, I think, when you're using it effectively, especially in your own domain. Think more about the, what I would call the editing mindset, right? Editors are the people who are the most senior role in a newspaper organization. I heard Yuval Noah was talking about how many world leaders were editors, named presidents or, you know, the other thing, because they think about what information is most important, and how to collect and collate that information and insight in the most effective way for them. That is a higher level skill. So as we think about our own personal trajectory with AI, we have to build our skill at editing. I would very intentionally be trying to build one skill as an editor. You're more of a thought leader.
this is kind of getting me to think about, even as we think about O1 and more kind of agentic, as it's sometimes called, AI, but already beginning to recognize that limitation of AI, or you could look at it as an opportunity, particularly of Gen AI. Gen AI performs best when it's working in a cluster of different really focused agents doing different parts, and including one of those being a humans or humans involved at different parts in their thinking. And so much of O1 is kind of actually allowing Gen AI or ChatGPT to talk to itself through the process to refine. And what I'm hearing you say is, much as it gets better when it talks and refines, there is still that additional human talking to it and refining as you go. And at least in my experience, so much of the fluency in Gen AI that I've been building is, how do you break down the problem? Maybe it's using the words of, what is success? Where are we trying to go? What are the permutations? How would we think about breaking down the problem? Because it is very different when you work with, to use a very simple example, you have a question on what matters in terms of employee performance for my team this quarter. You threw out that kind of question to AI and you're going to get a bunch of generic gobbledygook, right? You sneak back and you start with like, hey, what are the key drivers of performance on a given team? What do I believe the key inputs for that are? Okay, what data do we have that lines up to those? Okay, how do we pull it through? And the answer that you end up with at the end ends up being much more sophisticated.
I just want to double down on what you're saying. And you can tell as a consumer to end products who gave the generic prompt and who gave a really thoughtful prompt that walked the AI through the question, through the process, and gave it feedback along the way, or even asked it to evaluate itself and refine its own answers. So, you know, you can tell the work that has gone through that collaborative working structure and thoughtful working arrangement versus the generic one. It sounds generic, it looks generic. And I was actually expecting you to say that BCG also found a reduction in the quality of communications. You'd be surprised if a lot of people are doing those really generic prompts and ending up with a lot of really vanilla stuff that's coming out and actually creating more irritation and sort of a sense of inauthenticity. You may be able to do it in 2 seconds with that sort of generic prompt and then grab that and you think you won because you did a project that could have taken you a day in 2 seconds and you're like, I'm done. But it actually matters to take that 5 or 10 minutes to make sure that it's a really thoughtful process and what you pulled together is actually better than what you could have done alone and what it could have done alone without you.
You know, what you are reminding me of is a general concept I've been wrestling with. It's this efficiency and kind of quality divide, and that actually one benefit of very inefficient systems is they force us to iterate on quality as we go because we keep pushing and it's really frustrating. And so they're long, but you end up with a really high quality product. And one of the things when you radically increase efficiency that you have to watch out for is that you're tracking a quality metric right there along with it. Because what often happens is the inherent iteration that was happening through the system also goes away. We're very aware of the pain of slogging through and the pain of editing, and not so much of like the value that we are creating as things are getting better. Like you said, oh great, I have this done, but I'm seeing this pop up all the time, whether it's just the radical increase in like content that has come out in the last year. We're generating all of this stuff and it is coming with a decrease in quality. And one of the places that at least right now I'm most worried about that is actually in talent acquisition, that we have a world in which you have talent or recruiters relying on AI to write job descriptions, kind of moving away from really thinking about what the role needs and just throwing it out there and throwing out something generic. You have a lot of candidates doing exactly the same thing and throwing something that is pretty generic over. And then recruiters, out of a dearth of time and an overwhelm of stuff, then relying on the same Gen AI to sift through all of that content and ending up with a lower talent bar of candidate through the process. My hot take is today, if you're looking at talent acquisition and AI and you are only looking at your efficiency metrics and you do not have a way to measure talent quality coming through that at the end, you're going to end up with a really big problem in the next 12 to 18 months as you realize you've brought on an entire class of people who don't meet the same talent bar, you used to just assume, actually from the inefficiency of the process, that gave you some of those quality benefits.
I couldn't agree more. I actually am a bit concerned about the use of AI in the front of the funnel, as I would call it from a perspective, right? All of that talent attraction and recruiting exercise. First and foremost, I think that there's a way in which Gen AI and classic AI are equipped to help tremendously in this arena. As you're saying, if you sort of do it on faith, you implement it without maintaining the same level of rigor to hold yourself to a standard of actually understanding what's coming through that funnel, the likelihood that you're generating one, you know, not getting to the candidates you'd really love to be looking at, but also reducing your quality bar, I think is very high, right? The odds of those two negatives happening is very high. And the reason is that, again, the algorithms, especially in Gen AI, because they are not, the rationale that they're using is much more opaque than, say, for example, in classic AI. You and I were talking about this the other day, that I know the vendors who are making some very thoughtful efforts to not just switch to Gen AI because they want to make sure that the algorithms are more controlled in the data sets that they're exploring, and the features and people's resumes that they're searching for are more controlled than they would be in Gen AI, where it's a bit of a black box. Even if you're trying to control it, we tend to have less control than more. If you're talking to your vendors and they are not going out of their way to remove bias from their processes, then I guarantee you they're building it in. You should absolutely be asking that question of your vendors, and you should be deeply impressed by the nth degree that they go to make sure that you have observability, meaning that you know what features it's looking for in those resumes, and you have some way of auditing that it's also within that structure, because we have bias. We are dealing with a biased system coming in. Every company has bias in their hiring methods. And humans are very prone. If you're reading through 1,000 resumes, I'm 100% sure that we're going to make a ton of errors too. But just handing it over to a machine because it can simply read through 1,000 resumes more equitably than we can is not the stopping point, right? It has to be smarter than that. And we have to be smarter than that. And so just like managing bias is our job today, it is absolutely our job in the world of tomorrow. That is absolutely the kind of elevation of spending more time thinking about bias, spending more time elevating our selection criteria. That's where the day should be going.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. As you heard, AI is already impacting HR roles and processes, but there is a lot more to uncover. In our next step, we're going to take a step into the future and discuss how we at TL Partners see AI continuing to shape the HR landscape, from building AI fluency to tackling ethical challenges. As always, thank you for listening. I'm Thomas Igeme, and remember, the possibilities are endless.